the day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar secret societies and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. This program, the Guardians of the Holy Grail, was created by me to assist in clearing up many of the popular misconceptions that have perpetrated in the mainstream media regarding the secret societies, Holy Grail mysteries, and the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Now, through this show, I hope to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the initiatic societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries has either been lost or ignored. You can learn all about our Gnostic Templar organization and sign our mailing list by visiting this website, www.gnostictemplars.org. And while you're there, please sign our mailing list, and you will receive the monthly Gnostic Templar e-news. And you can also sign up for our 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course, and you can become an associate member if you feel drawn to doing so. There are videos to watch and books to buy on the website. One of the featured books now on the website is my latest book, called World Gnosis, The Coming Gnostic Civilization. Now, this book chronologues the movement to found a one-world civilization that started many thousands of years ago, and it talks about this new civilization and the Gnostic spirituality that is destined to be a part of it. This movement began in the ancient continent of Mu and Lemuria, and passed down through many initiatic organizations and secret societies and the Knights Templar down to the Rosicrucians and Freemasons down until today. Now, today during our show, if you have any questions for our guests, please feel free to give us a call at our toll-free number, which is 866-472-5795. Now, before I introduce my special guest today, I'd like to mention a pilgrimage I'll be leading this year in June. I'm leading a group down to Peru, and it's called the Mystical Journey to Machu Picchu and Lake Titicaca. I'll be taking my group to all these incredible megalithic temples that no one has a clue how they were built. And when the Spanish arrived in Peru in the 1600s, they were told that these temples were actually built by the Viracochas, the gods that that existed many, many years before the Inca civilization even existed. So we're going to go to these temples. We're going to do ceremony, shamanic ceremony within the temples. We're going to travel all through the Andes, Machu Picchu, Ollantaytambo, And then we're going to go to Lake Titicaca, which I believe is probably the strongest psychic vortex on the whole entire planet. It's really a focus of the goddess energies. And in fact, the Andean people say that they emerged out of the womb of Lake Titicaca. Today, it's said that the ancient solar disk, which was a power object brought from Lemuria by the ancient sage Aramumutu, this solar disk supposedly exists at the bottom of Lake Titicaca. And starting in 1992, it began a cycle of reactivation where the energies of this solar disk are emanating from the lake throughout the planet to help uplift all of humanity. So, of course, if you come to the lake, you'll be completely immersed in those energies, and that will greatly assist in your alchemical transformation that you're going through right now. During the pilgrimage in Peru, we'll also have a chance to spend some time with the Caros, and the Caros are some of the ancient Incas that weren't even known about until, I think, the 50s or the 60s. They were living high up in the Andes. And so they have kept the Inca culture completely intact, the culture and the rites. And so they'll actually be performing a ceremony for us. So it's going to be an amazing journey, and it's going to greatly assist all of us in our transformational process leading up until 2012. So I greatly encourage everyone to come, or at least take a look at this journey. You can get the full scoop about it if you go to www.sacredsitesjourneys.com. Now, my special guest today is Count Alexander de Bathory-Bathory, who is an author, international art collector and dealer, and a member of numerous initiatic organizations and dragon orders, including the Imperial and Royal Dragon Court. Alexander is descended from the noble house of Bathory, whose members were the rulers of Transylvania during the Middle Ages, and they also served as grandmasters of the Imperial and Royal Dragon Court that was founded by the Holy Roman Emperor Sigismund in 1408. Now, Alexander currently tours the globe while promoting his new novel, She Messiah, which we're all hoping will come out in English sometime this fall. Currently, it's in French, so unfortunately, I haven't been able to read it either. So anyway, greetings, Alexander. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Your new novel sounds very intriguing. It sounds similar to Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code, and it's actually like his is based on a true legend. Can you tell me something about it?
Yes, Mark. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Alexander de Bathory, and I'm the writer of She Messiah, in French, La Messie. And it's the story of a top model who has special features. She has emerald eyes, and she has also the talent of metagnomy, meaning that when she touches an object, she knows exactly the former owners. I think it's a trait in the dragon family. Then she discovered that the diamond with actually the jewel called the Southern Cross has powers and is transmitted through a chosen one through centuries and millennia. So it's more the object in choosing her. But also, you will discover in that novel that there is also people who want to have that jewel to control the world. So it's a thriller based on history and truth, and between New York, Palm Beach, France, and Italy.
Wow, it sounds amazing. I'm definitely intrigued about this diamond that you speak about in the book, especially since it's a true stone that it has really existed.
During the Revolution, the French Revolution, and Madame du Barry, the famous Contessa, who got it through Louis XV through the French treasure, because the stone was brought back to Saint Denis Abbey and given to the king, to his mistress. And during the French Revolution, an American, English-American traitor, in a kind of him, she was beheaded because he won the stone for Washington.
Wow. Amazing. Well, you know, that brings me to my next question. Is I'm really intrigued about the history of your family, the Bathorys. Can you give us a little bit of a summary of that amazing history?
The Bathory belong to the, as you know, the dynasty of the Bafara. The Bafara were nobody knows exactly the roots of the name, but an historian in the 19th century, Comister, has formulated the idea that Bafara means leader in that mysterious language not anymore known that the Dacian, the founder of Romania, was talking about. And the Dacian was exterminated in 100 years after Jesus by the Emperor Trajan. But they were like, as we said, the Gaul. The Gaul were the so they were healers for Romania, and they had gifts. So it means that early age, they were also dragon family already in Transylvania.
Well, I think we're going to have to take a short break here, Alexander, because the sound quality isn't up to par, unfortunately. So so we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a minute or two.
BBSradio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge, bringing humanity closer to truth.
BBSradio.com. Engaging, powerful, unforgettable. This is BBS Radio. You've got Spider Turner. When I turn on my computer, it's the BBS, baby.
Hi, this is Mark Omay, and you're listening to BBSRadio.com. Engaging, energetic, powerful, and unforgettable.
Well, thank you for tuning in to PBS Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be taking a little longer pause here. Please do excuse us. We'll be back in about 3 to 4 minutes. Thanks for tuning in.
Okay, we're back with Guardians of the Holy Grail and our special guest, Alexander Bathory. And we are speaking about his family and his amazing heritage in the Bathory line. And Alexander, can you answer that question I asked before we went off the air again? Give us a little bit of a synopsis of the history of the Bathory family.
The Basharab family? Okay, the Basharab dynasty, nobody knows for sure the name where it comes from. But in the 19th century, an historian called Asde formulated the idea that Basharab means leader in that mysterious language now lost by the Dacian. The Dacian was the first autochthon population before the conquest by Roman Emperor Trajan of Romania and Transylvania. And they are like the Druids of that region.
Tell us again the history of the Bathories, because it was hard to understand the first time that you explained it. So could you repeat that again about your family, the Bathories, and give us a history on that?
The Bathory were Hungarian, of course, leaders, as you know, and they were linked to the family of the Basharab. The Basharab means leaders in that old language death or loss talked by the Dacian. The Dacian were the first population of Transylvania and Romania. They were like druids, Essenians, but also king, and they have the ability to treat people with their hands, you know.
And so you're descended from these druid...
Yeah, the original families, yes.
Group of people.
And
I see.
Those Dacian, of course, they were conquered by the Roman Emperor Trajan, and then they moved to Europe, all over Europe, and they continued their teaching, you know, and became later on leaders of different countries.
So the Bathories are associated with the Basarabs, meaning that you have a connection
to the family of
Dracula, right?
Yeah, and Dracula, because the grandmother of Dracula was a Bathory.
Okay, all right. So is your family's has it stayed pretty connected to the Basarab family throughout the years?
Until the end of the 19th century, and then they moved in Europe, beginning of the 20th century, especially in France and Italy.
So, were the Bathories and the
family
and the
was living in Russia at the court of the emperor until 1917, just before the revolution, that fled to France.
So the Bathories and the Basarabs, were they part of the dragon court at the same time?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Well, you're also part of another dragon family on the other side of the family, an Italian noble family from Florence. Can you
yes.
speak about that?
Yes, they are the Raffaellis, and they were part also of the mysterious order called Fede Santa. Fede Santa was like the Freemasonry of the Templars during the Renaissance, Italian Renaissance, and painters, not Da Vinci, never were part of it. He tried, but he was not accepted. But they were Veronese and Titian, and it's why certain portraits have symbolism regarding that old brotherhood.
And So they had some rites and rituals and ceremonies associated with the dragon tradition?
The dragon tradition and also the Templar tradition, because even the Templars took some ritual from them. The initiation of the Templars today has nothing to do with the original one.
Right.
And the Templars
right.
were not, were already. Formed before that famous date, 1119. It was already people, prince from Sicily, who came to Sedne and found an abbey there, and they start the movement. So in the 11th century, it was already Templars, not beginning of the 12th century.
And so some of the Knights Templars came from your family?
I have a few of those.
You talked about Florence as being a city of the dragon. And so what did you mean by that?
What do you say?
Well, when we spoke before, you mentioned Florence. You talked about Florence as being the
Florence was always the city of the dragon. By the armorial of the city, they used the fleur-de-lis, and the fleur-de-lis was always in the logo of the dragons. You know, it's also the symbol of the Trinity, go back to Egypt, and the dragon tradition always were aware, the great priests knew about the dragon knowledge. So there is a link. When you see a fleur-de-lis, it's not only a royal family or royal symbol, but it's also the Trinity. And the Trinity, the number three, is used by the dragon. And you know the tree who means knowledge. So the tree is very important, the triad and the trilogy. So Firenze were always attracting Jacobites. For example, people who were the bloodline of Jesus, like the Stuart family. And they stayed there. Napoleon's family came to Firenze and lived there after Napoleon lost the power. So there is always something very secretive about Firenze.
Hmm. Do you think that there are still some secret things about Florence, maybe some secret orders or some secret documents that are still there?
Oh, yes. I know as a fact there is a fantastic family who linked to my family, Prince of Firenze, and they have five stories of documents, some dating back to the 8th and 9th century. And during the Second War, President Roosevelt gave the order not to bombard that beautiful palazzo because he knew, as a Freemason, that there were very important documents there not to be destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Well, if my memory serves me right, the fleur-de-lis was began as a symbol of France through Clovis, I think, of the Merovingians.
I think he took that, and he took also the bee from the Egyptian, you know. So it was also, the fleur-de-lis was the lotus, the Egyptian lotus at the beginning, and they changed it because it's very close. If you look at the Egyptian lotus and you look at the fleur-de-lis, it's very similar.
So the fleur-de-lis actually is a version of the Egyptian lotus. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay. Now Clovis and the Merovingians were also descended in the dragon line, right?
Exactly.
And
why they used on their tomb, on the burial, certain sign of the dragon, certain crosses with the use of the corbin. You know, that it's the old name for that blackbird. And the blackbird also was used by the dragon because he was the messenger for them, the black dove.
Well, we know that the Merovingians had certain abilities and certain powers. And we're finding out that apparently a lot of people that are descended in the dragon line also have acquired these powers and these abilities, including yourself. You yourself have the ability of psychometry, if I remember right, where you can actually touch something, and then the image or the vision or the knowledge of where this image has been or where it originated will come into your consciousness, right?
Exactly, Mark. It's why I built over the years a very important royal collection of object paintings who had lost their identity. But when I went to Sotheby's Christie's and when I saw them, then in touching them, I can visualize who it belonged to. Hello?
Mm. Right. So as an art dealer and collector, you'll receive some artifacts and some works of art that you don't know the origin of, but if you touch them, that information will come to you.
Yes, I will visualize the former owners. And I have also the ability, and Sotheby's knows about it, to block the telephone lines when I want something or the object wants me as a protector. So it's also ability from the mind or the brain. I don't know how to explain, but it's a gift that I'm sure few dragons have in common.
Well, it's pretty common within your family of the Bathories for members of the family to have these certain dragon powers. Especially there's your ancestress Elizabeth Bathory. I guess the legend is that she herself had some special powers. Isn't that right?
Yeah, you're right, Mark. You know well your history. It's true that she was a very close friend of the emperor at the time and of the Holy Empire. And she was also collecting for him all the best old master. And now you can see them in Prague. So with Emperor Rudolf, as you know, was also very much interesting as her, as alchemy and Tycho Brahe, the famous astrologer, and who did the map of the world. So she had a gift of knowing and finding treasures for the emperor. So she stayed almost 15 years at the court of Rudolf.
Oh, wow.
She has a wonderful collection.
The dragon power that runs through the Bathories came from these druid masters originally. Do you have any idea where these original druids, your druid ancestors, came from?
I think they come, some people think they come from the north, and others think they come from India.
From
it's
India.
It's very interesting, I think. Because
yes, it's extremely interesting to me, yeah.
Because I'm sure because you're very familiar to Asia, and there is some similarities between the dragon of the Western hemisphere and from the East.
Mm-hmm. Is there any DNA evidence that would show a link between those druids and India?
I think so.
Or the Bathories so. And
the,
India?
The paper in front of me, but I know there is links.
Interesting. Well, that's something that we're going to need to research a little bit, I think, huh?
Exactly.
That's quite fascinating. Yeah.
Because the karyotype isn't very interesting when you do the ADN analysis, you find incredible things. You know, it's like matching and following a family all over centuries, tracing them.
Right. Yeah, that's that's what we're working with now. You, myself, and others in Dragon Court, in order to understand the history of the dragon, the dragon lineages, and try to get to an understanding of their origins and
why that power. You know what is very interesting? Why God give us that power? Also, it's a question to be raised. When they are born, our last past memory are not totally erased. Because they want to, maybe they are leaders, or they have to have their memory not totally erased to science, to art. I don't know.
Well, is there much history of the dragons and the dragon wisdom and the dragon rites that have been passed down through your family?
I know some history. But it's difficult to say, because there is some secrets, of course. We know who were part of it. We know who were our protectors, who were killed to protect us, like Henry IV in France, the famous who was killed in 1610. Because, as you know, Church did not like the dragon heritage, like the Merovingian, for example.
Right. Well, there's been other dragon families in Europe. And I know that you, the Bathrys, have been allied with these other families at different times, like the Basarabs. Are you now also aligned with some of these other dragon families?
Not really. No, what the problem with the dragon families, we are protecting ourselves. So it's very difficult. We could try to communicate to keep low-key. So I'm using, for example, my book, Shimesaya, to reveal certain things because the dragon family, of course, the Stuart were part of the dragon family and they had the power, they were healing powers like the French kings when they were crowned in Reims. But, and you know what happened to the Stuarts? They were all killed. So,
right.
And then the Hanover took over. So it's always a battle of power, and the church, of course, diabolized the dragon, think it's Satan, whatever, but it's not
exactly.
Because it's the truth. Yeah. It's the gnosis, as you know.
Right. Well, as we talked about, we're in a different age now, a different time period, we believe, we've talked about this, how we believe that this could be the time for the revival of the dragon wisdom, that it becomes much more prominent in the world. Do you think that the members of the other dragon families agree with this and that they'll come together now to help to spread this wisdom?
I think so. And you know you're part of it. And I think all the families are willing to do something different to the world, you know. Some important ones, I don't want to name them, during centuries, when there were a problem of the equilibrium, of the destruction of the civilization, they will be there to take the torch. And in 2011, 2012, with the maybe a war looming in the Middle East, whatever, there is no time to reflect and time to to see a change of priorities to leaders to the world. And I'm sure Dragon can help.
Right.
Because there is,
well,
there is,
as a member of a Dragon family, have you felt yourself at all being threatened by, you know, some people in the world?
I think so. And people will say bad thing against us, or a lie about us. And what is very interesting, because you take, for example, the example of the wife of Napoleon, Josephine, who was dragon blood by Eleanor d'Aquitaine, both sides of her family. Today, all the royal family in Europe are related to her. So in all royal family of Europe, there is dragon blood.
Even today, huh?
Even today, yes. From Luxembourg to Sweden to Denmark to the Russian family to even Monaco, because one of the ancestors of Albert of Monaco, she was a Beauharnais. She was the cousin of Josephine's.
Well, so if we're going to reunite the dragon families, then basically we're reuniting all the royal houses of Europe.
Exactly. And they have to be aware and to have to be proud. But, you know, you see a lot of dragon in the coat of arms. So you also follow the dragon through the language of the heraldic.
Mm-hmm. Well, so do you think that there is a chance that we can start getting many representatives of the various royal families of Europe to come together as part of the, you know, the modern dragon court?
I think it would be ideal, and ideal that the movement, the court, have representative part of the original families, or they have related to Josephine, and because she was one of the last empress, dragon empress, on the throne of France, and she protected even the memory of the Templars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to ask you something a little different now. I'm familiar with that you are also a Knight Templar, and you're a member of an order of Templars related to Lohengrin, the Knight Lohengrin, the Swan Knight.
Yes.
Can you talk about that particular order of Knights Templar?
It's a very old a brotherhood, and it was revived in the 18th century by Baron Van Hund. And he knew a lot of things through, I don't know if you're familiar with Ramzed, who was also educator and also a Freemason from Scotland, and he came to the court of France. And through Germany, they revived part of the older Templar who were not destroyed after 1314. So they took some members from Scotland, some members from Germany, and some members from Portugal and Spain.
Oh, so you could basically say that this Knight Templar organization is a continual organization that has a direct link to the original Templars.
Exactly. And then the Freemasonry took it, and now it's more independent. It's part of the Freemasonry without being part. You know, it's more independent. And also other orders, like I told you about the Melusine Order, the Green Master of Europe, started that Melusine Order and 10 years ago, and trying also to gather all documents regarding the Templars and also the Lusignan family who were king of Jerusalem during the Crusades. So we gathered a lot of evidence and a lot of documents, and it would be ideal to have lecture of him in Sedona, for example.
Yes, it sure would. Well, so some of these documents you're talking about are original documents that were held by the Templars, huh?
Exactly, because and as some I'm aware, they have documents and also relics, and you know which one I'm talking about: the finger of Saint John the Baptist, for example, who was a very important relic in the Templars. Even Saint Louis, the King Saint Louis, wanted and the Templar declined to give it to him. And I know where it is in Europe.
So is it being held by a private collector then?
It is a private collector in a crystal box, and it's just amazing. Like the legendary head of Saint John the Baptist, who was reputed to be in Damas, in the Blue Mosque, but today is in a different place.
Is that also, do you believe, held by a private collector?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Amazing. So it sounds like so many of these incredible artifacts and documents of the original Templars, they weren't destroyed or even hidden. They ended up in the ownership or possession of art collectors.
Some, you know, what is amazing, some objects, they don't even know the origin of it. And it's sad because those objects, the history behind it, has to be revealed once for all. But there is guardian, they know where they are. And one day when it comes for sale, then one of us buy it. You know, and then the history and the memories come back, you know, and they are protected for life or forever. For example, I got at auction the cross of Joan of Arc, and it's one of the relics that Empress Josephine had for 10 years, and he used to belong to the Templars.
Well, I mean, I wonder how can you put a price on something like, you know, the finger of John the Baptist, you know, or the head of the head of John the Baptist?
Because it's part of history.
I mean, I wonder. I mean, what would be your asking price if you were to sell the head of John the Baptist? I mean, would it be $10-20 million or what?
It's like this year. I don't know if you knew the news. They discovered the head of Henry the Fourth, the French king. So there is no price to it. So, but it's very interesting. That relic is priceless. Also, you know, it's very powerful, more powerful than the holy shroud. If you may ask me, for me, if you had the head of St. John the Baptist, it's priceless for the Christian and also the Athenians. It's part of the whole history.
So are there many artifacts or documents or works of art that come through your hands that you have done psychometry on, that you have determined that were originally owned by the Templars?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Last year, because I'm traveling extensively for collecting furs, for a gathered object for a future museum, but also some private asked me, is it true, is it genuine? So I go to their place and I touch the object, I see, I visualize, is it good or not, and together we try to find the provenance. And sometimes I find something incredible, incredible objects, relics. Mm. And the sad story about it, a lot are not even well stocked, so some are decayed. Because people did not know what it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would imagine, too, that some of the artifacts you find, or especially body parts of saints like John the Baptist, when they come to you, they must have incredible power attached to them.
I would tell you, for example, even with the cross of Joan of Arc, I was in Lyon in France, and I entered a boutique, and I didn't know that the woman was... by the way, the boutique, the jeweler, the name was Templars. It's amazing, a famous boutique in Lyon. And as I'm entering in that boutique, I ask her if she has something about Joan of Arc, and she looked at me and she started to cry, because she knew at the same time that I have the relic in my bag. So it means that I'm not the only one. There is people who have powers to feel, because the object kept the energy of the deceased, especially Joan of Arc.
So these artifacts, I mean, they don't come up for public auction. I don't imagine. I suppose that you get them through secret dealers.
Yes, private dealers. Or privates, but sometimes, you know, they can come on auction, but they are mislabeled. I don't talk about relics, because there are few relics sold at Sotheby or Christie. I never saw that. I don't know if they are allowed it, but objects who belong to holy people or to Templars, it happened at Sotheby or Christie to come out. Like paintings, for example, I bought a painting who belonged to Elizabeth Bathory 5 years ago.
Well, I would imagine that you yourself probably have some pretty powerful power objects in your possession that you own.
Yes, I have an important painting who belonged to Rudolf, that Elizabeth Bathory bought for him, is the Last Judgment. He was in the bedroom of the emperor in Prague, and when he died, he went through the whole family, and he lost his identity until 15 years ago when I bought it, and then he was displayed at Milwaukee Museum as a new discovery, heart discovery to the world. But I knew, touching the object, I knew it was from him. So I have a lot of objects like that. but I will one day the public will enjoy it through a foundation or a museum.
Are there any objects that you have acquired that have special powers that you use to do special spiritual work with?
The cross of Joan of Arc, for example, is very powerful. And I'm aware that when someone, because when I feel someone wants harm me, I wear the cross on me, you know. And I can detect through that cross the wrong people.
So that, I can only imagine that must truly have amazing energy attached to it.
Yes, and for example, I wear it 5 years ago in Assisi. I was visiting St. Francis of Assisi because I was, at that time, writing an essay about St. Francis of Assisi and Joan of Arc. And I discovered that there were a blood relationship between the two saints through the mother. And I was wearing the cross, and suddenly I saw three archbishops and one cardinal coming to me and kiss my hands. I couldn't believe it, but they saw the cross on me, and they knew. So that object has power to attract people who are spiritual to each other.
Well, have you come across any artifacts that were specifically owned by any of the dragon families that contain a lot of power?
That icon. I have a very important icon. I told you about that Elizabeth Bathory had, and it was before her time. It was an icon belonged to the Hungarian king. And it saved, the Madonna saved the country because the Madonna and the icon start to cry. And I have that icon. And it's a wonderful piece of art. And I cherish it because during the Second War, it was supposed to say it was destroyed, but my father kept it away. And the Nazi was occupying the home of my father, did not discover it. But they knew it was there.
Oh, wow.
He was almost killed not to reveal where it was. Because,
sure,
as you know, Hitler was very interesting to powers.
Yes, of course.
To dragon powers, especially, because he wanted to rule the world and he was looking for the diamond. He went even to Reims and to have Nazis staying for a week in that cathedral, thinking the Holy Grail was hidden there.
Well, at the close of the Second World War, after the defeat of the Nazis, what happened to all those power objects that they had gone around the world and collected?
Exactly, and a lot of antiques and artifacts were moved from Europe to the U.S. And it's why today I find more objects in the U.S. than in Europe.
Really?
Oh, yes.
And they're what?
For example, the famous talisman, and I'm talking about Che Messiah, is in America, in Virginia.
Oh, really? And so these are being held by private collectors?
By private collectors without knowing the powers of those objects.
Wow. The diamond that you're in search of and that you talk about in your book, that's supposed to have some special powers attached to it, right?
Yes, he has a power. First of all, the diamond shoe is the chosen one. Is the object, and it changes colors. If you are the chosen one, if you take the diamond in your left palm, it changes color, it becomes ruby. Then the guardian of the object, because there is a secret order from called the Order of the Trinity of Luxor, who was after the one who are the owners since generation and generation. And the quality of those people is to guard not only the diamond, but also guard the possessors. They are not allowed to be the owner of the diamond because the diamond shoes, the chosen one, but they are protecting the diamond. And I heard about the story through my friend, the deceased Queen of Farida of Egypt in 1976 in Paris. And then I met them 2 years later.
Well, so the person that is chosen by the diamond, do they then receive powers from the diamond?
He can become the, like they said, he can become the leader of the world, meaning not bringing peace and bringing peace especially, and also be invincible. He got the immortality. But you have to have certain specifics to be allowed to become the chosen one. There is some conditions attached too.
Well, so the person that owns the diamond today, shouldn't he or she have some special powers then?
None.
No.
Because he was not chosen by the diamond. Unfortunately, you will read in the book, in the novel, the one who killed Madame du Barry, a certain Mr. Grieve, stole the diamond from her and then came in America because he was a friend of Jefferson. So he came in America. In 1807, he was killed by the agent of Napoleon I because Napoleon wanted his head. He was in Belgium at the time and he was killed. But the diamond stayed in the family to this day.
So then you do know where it is, huh?
I know. I make my investigation.
I see.
But, you know, you can have the diamond, but if you're not the chosen one, you will not get this power.
So have you seen the diamond?
What is interesting is the diamond is mentioned in different books. 17th century, 16th century, 15th, 14th century, even 11th century. And you can see leaders from Scotland, Gonelli, the jeweler, for example, of the Medici, is talking about the diamond, that diamond with the properties. They related even the diamond who belonged to King David, you know. And what is very interesting that you see that diamond traveling time and giving powers, or in a kind of vein, people are killed.
So do you have any idea what the origin of the diamond is, where it came from
very
originally?
Old. I think it comes from my side, because it was also already mentioned in the book of the death in Egypt. And the Egyptian, because even the Egyptian had made a temple for it, Queen of Sheba met at Makri, they make a temple for that diamond. And there are three diamonds all over. When you're digging your history, you find there is not only one, but three who give the similar powers. But I think it got from the Atlantis, you know, because they were, you know, very advanced.
Well, since you know where the diamond is, are you going to try to find that family and then, you know, see the diamond?
I would love to, but since my book is now quite popular in France, I have to change identity, you know, not to be recognized, you know. Right. If I want to see the diamond, right, first of all, I will try to have an introduction through an agent of Brother Templars who knows all the secrets, and I will ask him to be my intermediary and try to touch it to see if they are still the same power or changing colors, whatever.
Well, we'll have to have you on the show again later on after you've found the diamond and held it in your hand and to find out if you're the chosen one or not.
Yes, it would be fun to see that. But you know, I'm not so sure I'm the chosen one. The only thing I was chosen is was to write that story about it. You know, when you're born with a gift and sometimes a mission. And my mission was to write Shemesiah, and then people will continue, or brother will continue the mission.
Well, obviously you've been searching for this diamond for quite some time. Is there any other jewel or artifact that you're also searching for now?
I'm searching for some artifacts who belong to the Stewart family, because, as you know, a lot of jewelry from the Stewart family were hidden in Scotland and even in Ireland, they said. And one particular is very important. Of course, we found not everything. We found only two or three things. But they were a belt with a diamond, powerful diamond, and is still missing.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you find this, if you find this belt and this diamond, are you going to then buy it for yourself, or are you going to give it to a museum, or what are you going to do with it?
You know, I'm thinking, because I'm not eternal, I'm not a chosen one, so I'm thinking to do a museum, you know, and I think in 10 years from now, I will catalog everything. And because there is always story behind object, and when you're dead, the story once again is lost. So I will do a video. I will collect all my data about each object and do a museum about my royal objects, because I have objects that belong to Louis the 15, Louis the 14, all the French kings, and also things from Egypt. You know, it's a very eclectic collection. But the main link is royal lineage, or part of the history of the world. Like I'm for my Napoleonic collection, that I'm loaning now part of it to the Fine Art Museum in Montreal.
Well, you're going to let me know when the head of John the Baptist comes up for sale, right?
I know you are enjoying it yourself. And for me also, I would be fascinated to even to touch it with reverence. You know, it's for me, it would be a great moment in my life. I know where the finger is, but the finger is something, but the head is something else.
Well, I won't pry to get too much information about it, but is the head of John the Baptist in the possession of a Templar?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm very happy to hear that, at least.
Yes.
Okay, that's where it should be.
And they have a lot of people watching us for his protection.
Oh, is
so
that
I
right?
So I feel good about it.
So there must be some Knight Templar order that knows about it then?
No. Only few. When the treasure of the Templar was removed from France, part went to, as you know, Scotland, and part of in England, and part stay in France. The head stay in France because it was too risky to remove it and to cross the channel. Plus, with the salt, they were scared that it would fall, you know, the vessel would be destroyed, so they didn't know what to do. So we went to right in the middle of France in the casket. And then from a casket from a stranger, it went public, not public, but in his location not too long ago, I would say, 10 years ago.
Well, if I come and visit you over in Paris, will you take me? Can we go together to see the head of John the Baptist?
I will bring you to the Grand Master of the Templar Order. And then from that, of course, it will question you. Of course, it's normal between brothers to see if you are kind. But I will not surprise you will come because I know you love John the Baptist, and I will try to persuade him to bring you to that relics. Even myself, I was not allowed. I knew it was in one chambers, but I could feel the energy through the walls. But I know it's there.
Wow. Amazing, amazing. You have quite a fascinating life, Alexander, I have to say. I can really admire your work and probably a little bit jealous, too, because I love the mysteries, and I certainly love to be in the presence of something like the finger of John the Baptist or the head of John the Baptist or some of these other amazing artifacts that you've been in the presence of. So I would like to ask you, one more question.
Yes.
And that is, what do you think about now with spreading and reviving the dragon wisdom around the planet? What do you think is the best way to go about doing this?
I think the best to do about it is to write about it like you do. Secondly, to do a symposium, worldly symposium, bringing people from the Orient, from the West, where the dragon is very important in their religion, for example, the Taoism and even the South American, and to bring people together and to understand that we are a huge family spread all over the world, and we have the same powers. Sometimes we are complementary. And I think it would be wonderful to have members of the royal family of Europe who are linked to Empress Josephine, who was also a dragon. So it would be very interesting to have a symposium at different levels and to start a foundation or to start a library about it.
Oh, excellent. Well, maybe we could plan have our first big conference, Dragon Conference, maybe next year, 2012. What do you think?
I think, yes, I think, especially with the idea of the end of the world.
Exactly. Well, why don't we'll talk about that off air and
thank you.
And see if we can make this happen.
I think it would be a wonderful idea. But I know people will be willing to go along with that. People very important in Europe and well-connected with the Templars and the Dragon, and I'm sure they will love to meet you and love to meet the American counterpart. I think it would be wonderful.
Well, that's going to be your job is to get them involved because their acquaintances of yours, not mine. So if you can do that and you can bring them to this conference, that would be amazing.
Yeah, because
and
I have we should to be probably, back in May, probably Paris for two book signature fairs and also some lecture there about She Messiah. But I will meet people there. I will go to very important Templars cities all over France, and I will discuss that with members of the Brotherhood.
Okay. Well, let's start thinking about where we want to have this conference. It should probably be an area that has been associated with the dragon and the dragon power and the dragon families.
I think Poitou-Charentes with Melusine, with half women dragon, would be the best location if you're speaking about France.
What location is
and
that?
I know the man in charge there, who, maybe Lusignan, who they were king of Jerusalem. It would be wonderful to do a conference there.
And where is that in France?
Lusignan is in Poitou-Charentes. It's the region where the king of Jerusalem and Templar family came from.
Okay, that sounds good to me. All right. Well, that was easy. All right, now we can start planning.
Exactly.
Excellent.
We can start planning and rejoice because I think for the Dragon family, I think it's time they help humanity like they did in the past.
Exactly, exactly. Especially now as they're moving into the new Gnostic civilization where Gnosis will be, I believe, the main spiritual tradition on the planet, and the cultivation of the dragon force and the dragon wisdom will be, it's the primal religion. It's the true, it's the original, the primal religion, and this is what's going to be revived in the new era. This is what I believe. So it is time.
It's amazing, Mark, is today China is almost the leader, economic leader in the world, and they have the dragon as an emblem.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So it's happening.
The dragon is back in power.
The dragon is
not the eagle, but the dragon.
And so, what's so wonderful is now the dragon family is being reunited, and we're meeting our old dragon brothers and sisters, like I'm meeting you. And it really is a wonderful time.
Exactly, it's a wonderful time, and I'm sure we have bloodline-related links because we have the same vision and we have the same understanding about the dragon culture.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. And I'm certainly looking forward to your visit to Sedona, my dragon home here in the near future.
Thank you so much. I know that location is very powerful.
Yeah, it certainly is. Well, you'll know it firsthand when you come visit. So,
thank you, Mark.
Once again, thank you for being on this show, Alexander. You're an amazing person with an amazing amount of knowledge and experiences. And I want to mention again your book, She Messiah, which sounds like an amazing,
Francis Lamessi,
amazing book.
And you can see on Amazon. .fr. So you can see on the internet, you will see the book.
Okay. Well, and it'll be out in English in this fall, right?
Yeah, and Spanish too, both languages.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to that. So, Alexander,
so much,
once again, thank you so much for being here and sharing your dragon wisdom with us today.
Have a wonderful day, and for your auditors, thank you.
Thank you, Alexander. Okay, so that's our show for today, and we'll be back in March with another amazing guest like Alexander and talking about the Templar and Dragon Initiatic Society mysteries. So until then, always remember, if you're looking for the Holy Grail, and you're looking outside of yourself, you're looking in the wrong place, because it's right inside your own heart. So go there and find it. So bye for now.